ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Nightlife. News breakdown.
More time for Nightlife News Breakdown. Well, Labor's legislation to change the capital gains tax, negative gearing, and introduce tax cuts was introduced into Parliament today in a single major bill. This is the Treasurer, Jim Chalmers.
It cuts taxes for every Australian worker again and again. Yeah. It makes it easier for people to buy their first home, and it better aligns the tax treatment of labour income and asset income.
Not everyone's happy. Of course, Angus Taylor trying to make the best of it.
The arrogance of this government and this Prime Minister to not take this to an election, to not give it proper scrutiny, to not allow people to actually look at it, and to not explain to people how it's all going to work, I've never seen anything like it. It's a disgrace.
Well, I'm trying to break it down tonight. John Black, Executive Chairman of political profiling firm Australian Development Strategies, joins us for an edition of Nightlife News Breakdown. John, good evening to you. Welcome back to Nightlife.
Yeah, thanks, Phil. Good to be
here.
I
heard some punter today saying he's just had an election and look what happened. Why does he want another one?
I don't think he's keen on it. I think he's keen to have a period of stability without an election.
Hmm. Yeah, since Labor revealed the tax changes, do you think there's been any movement in polling numbers? What are you making of the tax changes? Because, I mean, there's been a campaign from the usual vested interests, I suppose, against them. How do you think they're travelling?
Look, numerically, the latest couple of polls have shown the ALP vote heading south since the budget of a couple of points. And One Nation going up, and the coalition going down a point or so, but that's, you know, within sampling error. Mm. So that's neither here nor there, but it appears that there's been an increase in the One Nation vote at the expense of the government, and that's consistent with the sort of thing that we saw happening with reform in the UK, you know, where it cannibalised the Conservatives first and then started to move onto the Labour Party, onto the left. So the same sort of thing is happening here. It's a very unstable period for the established political parties, as we're seeing.
Mm. Yes, Mr. Albanese was framing the tax changes as a way of making things fair for younger people. Well, you know, having had many of these conversations on air over the years, people know there's a problem. This is Mr. Albanese.
So that future generations don't say, is it true, Dad or Mum, that there was a time where people were actually able to buy their own house, not just inherit it? That is what we are fighting for.
Well, shades of, you know, what did you do in the war, Dad?
A little bit histrionic, yeah.
Yeah. Is it? What does the poll data suggest, though? That I mean, people know there's a problem, so they want to do something about it. Is what the government's doing what they want to do about it?
Look, under the undercurrent that I'm picking up from all of the polling, and in particular from the rise in One Nation, is the objection to the increase in migration, and that's linked to the rise in the number of students, you know, dodgy students. It's not the formal migration program, but it's the rise of overstayers and people who are basically abusing the system. So whatever, you know, if you found a really well-qualified economist, they could argue quite convincingly that this isn't pushing up the price of housing, but it doesn't wash with ordinary Australians who vote, particularly in the country, particularly older Australian-born persons who have been living in the country for a long time. They're in their 60s and 70s and that sort of thing. They're seeing a fall in our fertility rate. So, you know, we're heading down towards the levels of fertility that we see in Southeast Asian countries now in some of our wealthier suburbs. So it's not only the fact that immigration has increased and has started to increase again since it dropped back a bit, but that the fertility is dropping down. So there's this level of insecurity. And something happened at the time of the Bondi shootings which crystallised that, which froze it in time, when instead of going back down again, the recovery in One Nation, or the surge in One Nation, stayed. I personally thought that it would fade back when the leadership changed, because the decline in the coalition vote was associated with the fall of Susan Lee and the compromises that she made. You know, she basically, you know, as everybody knows, she got bullied into doing things she didn't want to do. So rather than resign or take a matter of principle and cop it, she basically rolled over too many times. So, you know, that stayed. And then I thought it would, you know, it would improve with a leader who wasn't unpopular, but Phil, it didn't. It just kept on going. And I didn't expect to see what we saw in South Australia. The results are extraordinary.
Yeah, we haven't spoken since that poll last weekend from Redbridge with Cos Samaras, which the Australian Financial Review published, which showed that if an election was called tomorrow, that's last weekend, there'd be some eye-catching results for One Nation. Basically, the government would have a very slim majority in the House of Representatives. One Nation would be easily the biggest party in opposition with 53 seats as opposed to 70-odd for Labor, and the coalition all but gone and the National Party completely gone. Now, Pauline Hanson was asked about the poll.
Look, Ron, it's very encouraging, but it is only a poll. The real poll is on election day.
Well, they've said that since time immemorial. I suppose the question here is, which everyone is trying to answer, John, I'd love your take on it, is the One Nation thing a bubble, or are we seeing in front of our eyes a fundamental realignment of conservative politics forever? Well, forever is whatever that means in politics.
Look, as I said, undercurrents is migration, and that's going to get bigger. That's the figures in the budget. So that's not going to go anywhere. You know, with falling fertility, the government has to encourage migrants to keep up the supply of taxpayers, you know, and to head off a nominal recession if things go south. So there's no doubt that they're saying one thing and doing another. And that's what's causing the problem. The other thing that we've seen from modelling income over the last few years, particularly taxable income, and now we've just been able to see negative gearing figures and also figures for capital gains, which I can share with you in a minute if you like. But look, the trend has been that the wealthier persons in Australia, which is basically the teal voters, two income professionals, professional management male partnered with a professional female, that's a typical pattern now, with only one golden child, older, at a very expensive independent school, taking out private health insurance. So they're consuming right, if you like, but voting left. And, you know, that's the dominant group, and it's just got wealthier, Phil. And the people at the bottom end, the less well paid, have got poorer, and that's a recipe for the rise of the right, particularly when you ally it with rising migration. So, you know, I think they're the seeds for it. I thought it was a bubble, but I'm not so sure. We had an election in South Australia. And it turned out to be real. So we had an election in Farrer, a by-election, and that turned out to be real as well.
It may still be a bubble.
Still be a bubble, but it's a kind of durable bubble, Phil. And if it keeps going at its current rate, and if it settles in, then it may be maintained until the next election. You know, the campaign experts, I mean, I've managed a few campaigns. You've got to, you know, plan for the worst and hope for the best. So they would be planning for the worst, which kind of makes the current sort of budget a bit curious. But as far as the Redbridge poll is concerned, I've been doing profiling of demographics of voting since 1976. I don't want to tell you how many years ago that was, but you can work it out. It actually does work. It's a very valid way of taking a vote in one jurisdiction and applying it to another, or even at a state level and applying it to a federal level, which I did for the South Australian results. My results weren't a million miles away from what Redbridge got, and we published those in the Financial Review. But I had the ALP doing a little bit better. because the ALP is gaining votes at the upper income ranges, you know, the teal voters and the aspirational migrants, particularly migrants from China and India, the Indo-Pacific areas. They're highly aspirational, highly transactional, and very ambitious for themselves and for their children. So, you know, they're the demographics driving the Labor vote in the outer suburbs and the more expensive suburbs. So, now, that's been the case for a long time, and they're making up 7 out of 10 new voters in due course. So, you know, this is what we're going to look like. So this is a demographic that's the real key to determining the outcome of elections. Now, you know, they are solidly behind Labor. Down the bottom end of the income spectrum, you've got all of those people who live in areas where they've been going backwards. And they're the angry voters, and they're voting, and the surveys have borne this out. It's about 40% of the voters are voting against One Nation. You know, they're the wealthier Liberal and Teal voters who don't want their second preference to go to One Nation. So they're voting Labor to make sure that their votes don't go to elect a One Nation candidate. And if the Liberals continue to give preferences to One Nation, then they're going to ensure that this is maintained.
Mm. I was going to ask you about that, because in Farah, the coalition preferenced One Nation. But this strategy, interested in your view about this, this strategy surely will cause their demise if they're not careful, aren't they? I mean, Angus Taylor, for example, could lose his seat in Hume on the basis that he preferenced One Nation, because if he comes in third, then that's the end of him if he's preferenced One Nation.
Well, it's a simple matter of maths. Yeah. I mean, you know, if One Nation's polling around about 30 points nationally and the Liberals are polling about 24, 25, then in the majority of cases, and I think the Redbridge poll was right. I was a little bit below that. I thought around about 40 seats. I had about 53 on average. But that's valid, because what's happening is that the Liberal preferences, where they poll lower than One Nation, go to elect the One Nation.
That's right.
Unless the Labor Party gets eliminated first. So, you know, you have the situation where the Liberals were on a handful of seats. In every case, they were elected on Labor preferences in those seats. In every case where the One Nation Party won, they were elected on Liberal preferences. Right. Now, you tell me how bright that is for a strategy.
What's a better strategy for them, though? Because, the rather lame, I thought, response in Farah was, oh, well, our supporters didn't want to preference the community independent, Millthorpe. But they're going to have to eat some rather unpleasant sandwiches, aren't they, if they're not going to avoid a wipeout?
I think David Farley, the One Nation candidate, was pretty popular, and he identified a bit with Labor and identified a bit with the Teal.
Yeah.
The Millthorpe actually didn't allocate preferences against One Nation. She had two bob each way this time and last time. So she was sort of six of one and half a dozen of another there. So there was no real candidate that you could vote for in order to keep One Nation out, whereas in South Australia you had the option, and around about 1 in 10 voters overall swung to Labor from the Liberal Party. And then at the bottom end, in the richer areas in Adelaide, but in the country, the poorer coalition voters swung to One Nation. And what was left in the middle was 16%. It was not a lot.
Polls show some interesting numbers around One Nation in the Senate too, don't they?
Yep. Yes. Look, on 30 points, as I well know, Phil, 30 points is enough to elect two senators easily. So all you need is about 28 and 4/7, but who remembers, you know? So,
John's been there himself, of course, back in the day.
I think I needed 42 and 6/7, but, you know, I was a little bit short on that one the last time. But, they'd get two senators, out of the at each half Senate election, and that would be a huge impact on the composition of the Senate.
Yeah,
they would be in the balance of power. There's no doubt about it. And I guess that may be what's motivating the Teals to start to move into the Senate, or at least think about it.
What do you think about this idea of the Teals establishing a formalised centre-right party? Does this take away their appeal in the first place, or would this make sense? Putting aside, I mean, there is a funding issue here, which I understand. They'd get more money if they were a party, possibly. What do you think in a voting sense, though, a polling sense, would they do better as a party rather than independently?
Well, you need to, be a bit Machiavellian here, and they need to be one thing at the local level and another at the central level. Mm. And the National Party's been doing that for as long as I've been in politics, Phil. Mm. So, you know, they'll speak one way in the House and vote another, and then depending on where they are, show the vote or the speech. So you basically have to be an independent at the local level. But at the central level, you're not elected as a Teal to be a glorified mayor, you know, of Warringah or, you know, Wentworth.
Or Toorak or whatever it is, yes.
Mate, you're elected to help run the country and determine who the Prime Minister is and to have a say in national politics, whether we go to war, you know, or not. How much of the budget we spend on welfare and how much we spend on defence. You know, the federal government makes big decisions about the allocation of resources and our position in the world. You can't hide behind this sort of local independent thing forever. You know, it was a good idea at the time. It was clearly designed to keep the Liberals out of government because the Teals didn't challenge any Labor people, and I don't think they are now. There might be one or two nominal ones, but it was, you know, it's like a left-wing version of the DLP, which was there to keep Labor out of office. The Teals have been put in there to keep the coalition out of office for environmental reasons. So they should have had the wit in the last 6 years or so to come up with a plan to get around the being an independent at the local level in terms of how you voted at a national level in the federal parliament. And it's a matter of being, I guess, some sort of caucus within which you have a free vote. For heaven's sake, it's not that hard. You know, running ALP factions, mate, is hard. This is not hard.
Yeah.
I've done both.
Yes, the question of that's right. I mean, it's a bit like One Nation, actually, isn't it? Is it a bubble? I mean, are they building something durable, or is this a permanent? In other words, is this a permanent realignment of what's going on in centre right politics, or is it just a phase? A bit like, is One Nation a phase? What do you reckon?
Well, I've thought it was a phase, and I've thought that at the next federal election we wouldn't be seeing it anywhere near as strong as we are now. Right. But I have to say, the evidence keeps contradicting me. And Phil, when you're confronted with evidence that makes you look a bit stupid, you tend to kind of reconsider your position. You know, if the facts change, as Keynes said, I change my views. What do you do, sir? Mm. So I don't think it's going to be anywhere near as strong in a federal election as it has been in a by-election or as it was in South Australia, because, you know, both of those were sort of protest votes to a certain extent. I'll stick with that for the time being. But in the meantime, you'd be a mug if you're running a political party not to have a look at the demographic profiles of who's impacted by what you're doing at the budget, whether you should oppose it or support it, and how you should handle that. And they're the sorts of things that determine whether this is durable, whether it's a bubble or not.
Mm.
You know, because there are people who are genuinely ticked off with what the government is doing now, and there are serious opportunities for the coalition now in terms of, you know, aspirational voters who are trying to get ahead. You know, and a few years ago they walked in to see their accountant, and their accountant said, well, you know, here's the first thing we do is set up your bucket company for your new business, and the next thing we do is set up a trust so nobody sues you for vexatious reasons because you made a dollar. So what the government's attacking is the standard procedure for setting up a small business in Australia, which has been the case for a long time.
Mm.
So, you know, there's a lot of people who are benefiting from that. And mate, I know of cases, Phil, where, you know, people in their 50s have had set up a trust. They're giving some money out of the trust to their older daughter so she can, you know, save up a deposit, buying shares to put it down on a house. That's gone. They've got another trust, a discretionary testamentary trust for their mother and who's now retired, and that's been nobbled as well. So, you know, they were sharing a bit with their wife who'd retired after 30 years as a teacher. That's long enough for anybody to be a teacher, I think, as you probably would be aware, and that's been nobbled as well. So these are people who are, you know, solid left-wing Labor voters who are seriously ticked off, and I don't think it appeared in the focus groups immediately because it's taken a while to filter down.
Interesting. All right, John, always great to talk with you. Appreciate it. Thanks for your time.
No, that's my pleasure, Phil.
John Black is the founder and executive chairman of Australian Development Strategies, man with long political experience, a columnist and researcher as well.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.